Welcome to the 18th National A Archives Workshop. I am an alcoholic and my name is Brandon Rhodes. Please turn off all electronic devices, including cell phones and recording or photographic equipment. The DoubleTree is a non-smoking hotel. Everything from room 803 hospitality must stay there. That includes coffee and snacks. I've asked Linda S. to read the preamble.
Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety.
And I've also asked Bill to read the 11th tradition.
My name is Bill White. I am an alcoholic.
Hey, Bill.
Anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all our traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. There may be some here who are not familiar with our tradition of personal anonymity at the public level. Our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need also to always to maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, and films. Thus, we respectfully ask that AA speakers and AA members not be photographed, videotaped, or identified by full name on the audio tapes and published or broadcast reports of our meetings, including those reports on new media technologies such as the Internet. The assurance of anonymity is essential to our efforts to help other problem drinkers who may wish to share our recovery program with us. And our tradition of anonymity reminds us that the AA principles come before personalities.
Okay, so that brings us to the topic, which would be, what was your reflection of life living with the first Black delegate in Alcoholics Anonymous? Now, I have to say this for myself. Again, my name is Brandon Rhodes, and I am an alcoholic. And my sobriety date is May the 4th, 2007. And my home group, actually I have two, is Monday Night Beginners at 4021 Walnut Street and Fifth Chapter in Norristown. And I am under sponsorship. You know, with that being said, it is a privilege and an honor for me to be a participant of this. You know, I am the eldest grandchild of Lou Senior R. And one of my thoughts and reflecting back for me was realizing how growing up, you know, my grandmother and grandfather used to take us on outings, and one particular outing was, I believe, down south in Louisiana, if I'm not mistaken, and how my grandfather showed patience and tolerance and helped me scale fish and ride a pony and things like that. And I also remember things like every Thanksgiving, it was a lot of people at my grandparents' house. We always had Thanksgiving at my grandmother and grandfather's house. But it was people there that I never really seen before, but they were called Uncle Such and Such, Uncle Earl. And I was like, who are these people? And at a young teenage year, I started to realize, like, I don't remember seeing them any other time of year but just on Thanksgiving. And as time went on, they were members of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, I remember briefly being in my grandmother's kitchen, and these pictures here were in the kitchen. I was like, "My mom, who is that white man with Pop Pop?" And at the time, I did not know it was Bill W. You know, I am ever so grateful to be a part of this family. The woman that I'm getting ready to introduce to you, I love her dearly. You know, she is my grandmother and my rock, and I believe in my heart of hearts, the Rose family's rock. With no further ado, I would like to introduce Mary R., my grandmother.
Good afternoon. My name is Mary Rhodes, and I am a grateful recovering member of the Parkside Al-Anon family group.
Hi, Mary.
I am truly grateful to be here, and I want to thank Anne Marie and the rest of the committee that made this possible, that I was able to share my experience, strength, and hope with you in this, well, for me, very unusual workshop. I have never heard of an ARPA's workshop before. I've never seen anybody else who had heard of it, or I never knew anybody that attended the Archivist workshop or Archives workshop. So I'm a very curious person in the first place, and that made me doubly curious to come when I was asked to share on this particular topic. And I had to say, oh my, I'm going to have to sit down and sort this out, because some things you really don't need to say. However, when especially sharing on a person as, I would say, colorful in the program of AA as my husband was. And I guess that's why his legacy still lives on. Because I can remember when he became sober. I mean, he was trying to get sober. And we went to this particular doctor, very famous doctor in the Philadelphia area, Dr. Kissin, who treated many alcoholics and knew a lot about alcoholism. And Lewis went to him because somebody told him he would help him get sober. And after Dr. Kissin talked with him and told him what an alcoholic was like and some of the behavior that he was said he had really indicated he might have a drinking problem. And he listened, and then Dr. Kissin had the syringe in his hand with some clear medicine in it. And I was saying, oh, thank God, he's going to give him something to take the taste out of his mouth. And I had never been so disappointed in my life. And I really, I needed treatment. When he said to my husband, oh, this is not going to stop you from drinking. This is a vitamin shot because you haven't eaten it so long. That was one of my disappointments. So after we got out of the doctor's office and Lewis was walking along trying to sort this out, how he was going to accept this, he said, oh, I'll accept the fact that I'm alcoholic, but I don't need anybody to tell me how to stay sober. And he tried it on his own for 3 months. And he finally it didn't work. And when he came back, he said to me, would you please call those people? He went to two AA meetings. And he said, will you please call those people and see if I can get back into that, whatever it is. And if I get back there one more time, I'll never leave. And that was a true statement. He died sober and happy. And many things, I was just thinking about the many things that happened during the sobriety. Well, let's go back to why I'm here about the first delegate. We, Lewis and I both, I was very active in Al-Anon, and he was very active in AA. And we never talked very much. I never realized how little talking we did. Sometimes we almost have to write notes to each other. But we always were able to take care of the needs of the children. And no matter how busy Lewis was, he was never too busy to attend whatever the children was going on, was in, he was there. And whatever was going on at school, whatever was going on in church, he was there. And when, and so that was the one thing we really shared together. And so when he, the thought went right out of my head. So when they were getting ready for the election, for electing him delegate, I didn't know anything about it. But he just merely said, on the way, I'm going to the election, this is election year, and I'm going to Atlantic City to the election. And I saw his back more than I saw his face anyway. He's always going out, going somewhere in AA. So I didn't know that he had been elected on that Sunday morning. One of the AA members came by the house and said to me, "Mary, you really should be in Atlantic City." He said, "Lewis has just been elected to a very important position, and you need to be there." And I said, "Well, isn't that important, Lewis? I guess he'd have told me." But anyway, Gene Clark kept coaxing me until I got dressed. And he said, "I'll take you." And I went down to Atlantic City that Sunday morning. When I got there to the Dovell Hotel, everybody was so excited. And they were, like a child at Christmas time. You know, oh, they were just, "Did you hear the good news? Lou has just been elected delegate." And because that was such a breakthrough for the whole fellowship. That was the first Black delegate that had been elected in the United States. And Pennsylvania had the honor of sending the first Black delegate to the General Service Office. And tell you the truth, I wasn't that excited about it. I was looking at the other people. Oh, that's nice, that's nice. And when I saw Lewis, I congratulated him. And I don't know if I stayed that night. I'm almost sure I did. But you see, we had children. And if Lewis didn't think about them, and he did, but he didn't think about them the way, you know, if they were at home, oh, that's right, they'll take care of everything. Because the boys, they were getting up to the teenage stage. And they were pretty good children, we could trust. And so, that's how it started. But, you know, people talk about being the first Black delegate. Lewis was more, I think, known, I know, in many places because of his knowledge of the traditions. He was truly a person who believed that the traditions, and the traditions were not acceptable, really, in the groups. And AAR, I didn't know about that until, so I was talking to somebody just the other day, and they were telling me that the tradition wasn't discussed in the AA meetings either. And you dare not discuss a tradition in Al-Anon. People would get up and walk out. They said, "That's only you use tradition for business. You don't discuss a tradition in any irregular meetings. And Lewis could not accept that. That was a second legacy, and he thought that it was a part of our recovery. And he was very adamant about that in the groups. And he got through to many, many groups and did get the traditions started talking about them and really at least read the traditions in the groups. And that's what he was really known for. And I really hated to have to compliment him. Lewis had a way of discussing traditions and talking about traditions in a way I have never heard anybody else share on a tradition that you can use in your personal life, like he did. He was almost, I'd say, a genius with that. And that made many people ask him to come and share on the traditions. And after he was elected delegate, we traveled a lot throughout the country. But anybody who had heard him share on the tradition, that was the reason why he was invited. And I can remember that one of the delegates out west said he was going to really have Lewis come and speak to at their convention. And they had never had any person of color to speak at any of their conventions out west. And he said, well, I'm going to tell you right now, this is at the General Service Office. They were talking. He said, I don't think it's going to be easy, but I'm going to have you as the AA speaker for our convention. And so he did. He went and he invited Lewis. He told the convention people about this guy he met at the General Service Office, one of the delegates. And this way he had of talking about traditions, he really wanted the convention people to hear it. And it was a knockdown, drag out in the planning. They said, no. We never had one. We don't intend to have one now. But a loving God, as he does express himself in the consciousness of our, of our groups and committees and whatever, they did decide. They were tried one time to see how it worked. So we were invited, and I went along. And Lewis, and when we got there, we flew into Indianapolis and then drove. It was a day's journey to Fort Wayne. And as we were getting out of the car at the hotel, like this hotel, people were driving up from everywhere, and we were the only black couple there, a person of color, out of about 800 or 900 people. And so it was very easy to recognize, that we were really easy to recognize. So we were, and one of the committee guys, a very short little man, I can see him in my head now, he ran up to Lewis and was shaking his hand, looking at his face. He said, you must be Lou. He said, I'm glad you're here, but I want to tell you, I hope you say something important. And I tell you, the people that Lewis took that little information, he was excellent at that, taking little pieces of information and turning it into a tradition that we should be working on. And that night when he shared, he had people on the floor laughing about that little guy coming up to him. And the lady also that took him for the bellhop. And when she cut, and she said, just walked up to him and like, oh, he's the only black man there. And she said, will you take my luggage up? And the guy nearly fainted. He said, don't you know this is our AA speaker? And he said, no, he's not taking your luggage any place. And the lady was so embarrassed. But those were some of the breakthroughs. Those are some of the things that, you know, you look back, we talk about archives. These are things that how far we've come since then. And many other places, we were asked to go to a place in Virginia, and one of the conventions. And they had the same trouble. And this was one of the past delegates that said he wanted him to come. And the committee was having trouble there also. And so when Lewis spoke that Saturday night, and it was right after the march on Washington, and he took that particular piece of incident, and the guy that the convention chairperson, who's also the person that invited Lewis, his last name was Lynch. And so Lewis took that and the march on Washington and thought, you know, it took a lot of courage to come down here, because with the chairperson's name being Lynch and the march on Washington on this side, he said, that was not easy to make that decision. And honestly, it was, we had more fun. The people were just so generous and so warm and friendly, you know, all these different places that we got to go. And one man came to us, came up after on Sunday morning and said, you know, I enjoyed you so much last night in your share. I had said I wasn't coming. And I said, I'm going home now and get Mama. Because I didn't bring Mama because I didn't want to come myself. But I'm going home and get Mama. And he went home and got his wife and brought her. That's what he called his wife, Mama. Those are the two conventions that we gained so many beautiful friends that we kept in touch with. But all these were breakthroughs in the fellowship. A loving God expressing himself in the consciousness of the people. They were doing the best that they could with what they had, you know. Al-Anon and AA alone don't clean us up. We will, as we walk the journey through the steps and the traditions, a loving God express himself in the consciousness, our conscience, and the consciousness of the other people. And so that was how it was in many instances with Lewis's experiences and mine, because wherever he went, I was invited. Now, at the General Service Office for his first term as delegate, that was a feeling and an expression that is, I can never tell you what that meant. Well, first, I just went. I was working, and I went that Sunday with him to the conference to be there from Sunday till Wednesday, because I had to go back. I had to go to work, and we also had the children at home. And Lewis kind of wanted me to stay for the entire week. Well, when we got there, it was like an alien kind of dropped out of Mars, because everybody was kind of, this was the only black face there. And they were looking, you know, they heard about this black delegate. And many of them came up and from different states and Canada and so on, and spoke, but it's when they were having those sessions that Lewis impressed Bill so much, because with the knowledge he had of the manual. Because Lewis carried his manual everywhere he went. And he'd always say, it's in the manual. It's in the manual. And when they were having their sessions, and he would refer to certain parts of the manual when they would have their discussions, until Bill, when they were looking in the manual, Bill shared on whatever there was, and then thumbed down his personal manual and handed it to Lewis. And I thought that was terrific. That was really terrific. Lewis was so excited. And when we got there, from these pictures, I don't know, we walked in the General Service office and were standing in a hallway. And this tall man came from behind somewhere else and just put his hands on our shoulders. And I don't know, I could never express that feeling. It wasn't like I was meeting a celebrity, you know. But I just felt, I didn't want to, I guess you could see the crazy grin on my face. But I just kind of looked to the side and said, this is Bill Wilson. To meet the man that put together our lives. He touched our lives. You know, and here we are standing in his presence. And I just had that crazy grin on my face. It just looked like I was leaving the floor. I just felt so strange. I looked like I wasn't breathing, and I didn't want to move. And he was so quiet spoken. I don't know if he ever spoke to me, but he was talking to Lewis. And I can't explain it. I really can't. But it was a spiritual thing that happened at that moment with us. And then we, the next year, I went from Wednesday till Saturday so we could go out to Stepping Stone. And that, because Lois didn't come in to New York that first year that Lewis was delegate. And so I went to the end of the session the week so I could go out to Stepping Stone that Saturday when the conference ended. And that's when I met Lois, our founder. And what a lady. What a lady. I tell you, she was small in stature, but she had a powerful voice. And so, and she was, and it was about 800 people, the buses that went from New York out to Stepping Stone. And she stood out there and welcomed everybody that got off the bus. And, hi, welcome. And she did that till everybody was on the ground or in the house. And it was when I was walking through the house that I realized this is where it all happened. It happened here. Not really Bill's recovery, but where they put their lives together in the only home they ever had owned. And reading Lois Remembers, you know, where they had come from, because Bill was an alcoholic. He was, I mean, from his behavior, just like any other alcoholic. And some of the things that Lois talks about in Lois Remembers, I just stopped one night reading that book. I said, this lady was crazy. Because anybody else would have been gone a long time. I would have if I'd had a chance. I'd have been gone. But just all of that came to me, and especially when I went upstairs and looked in the library where our fellowship was born. And I said, all happened here. And it just seemed like a spiritual thing that went over me that I couldn't explain, and I just bust out crying. And then other people were passing and walking and looking around. And I tell you, I can't say what went on with the other people there, but it just seemed like I was alone. I just was just alone with the spirit of what happened. That's why I think the archives keeping records of what happened then. The shoulders of those people of what got us in our seats here today, because we're standing on the shoulders of those people that went before us. And we should always try to keep a record, an up-to-date record, because things can get distorted in our God and misplaced and misquoted. So I think it's a wonderful thing that you do have this Skype workshop so that you can keep updating what happened then. Because if you don't know what happened then, there's a good chance you won't know what will happen in the future. You build your future from the type of past we set. And these people, Lois and Bill and Ann and a lot of those people, I was so grateful that I was able to meet a lot of those people while they still lived. I was able to meet and talk with, I just said hi to Lois. She didn't have time to talk and with any one person. But everybody wanted to at least touch Lois. And so I have had a wonderful life with the man that made it all possible, because if Lois had not been in AA, I wouldn't have found Al-Anon, and I wouldn't have the wonderful life I have today. And I want to thank you for letting me have this opportunity to share. Thank you very much.
Wow. I was trying not to get real emotional just listening to my grandmother. Well, you know, as earlier I shared about my recovery date, and I want to say that I was around this way of life at the age of 20. And I was around. I wasn't in. I was around AA. And based on not capturing the first step, not surrendering to this way of life, I drank after being around 17 years. And I was in active addiction for 5. Through me being in my active addiction, I witnessed and I want to say this, that based on my experience, this is a hereditary disease. You know, I am a third generation a recovering alcoholic. Both my grandfathers had the disease of alcoholism, and they both died in recovery. And I also have a father who's in recovery. You know, I'm ever so grateful for this 12-step program. You know, and my addiction, my father never once mentioned, to my knowledge, about me going back into AA or coming to the rooms. What he did was, what Bill read was the Loving Tradition. It was the attraction rather than promotion. He stayed sober, and I watched him stay sober through all my insanity and madness. And it was a lot. It was a lot. One thing my dad never did was say to me, why don't you come back to AA? What he did was stay sober. And when I truly surrendered to this way of life, I called on him for help. You know, and that started my road of recovery a day at a time. And with that, I would like to introduce to you my father, Lou R.
Honor is a seed to access. Honor, when sown, is a seed to access. When a husband gives honor to his wife, he gains access to her heart. When a wife gives honor to her husband, she gains access to his heart. And when children give honor to their parents, they gain access to their parents' hearts. My name is Lewis Rhodes, Jr., and I am an alcoholic. I am a success and a winner today because I didn't drink alcohol. That statement has been something that I captured in my spirit, and I hold true to be for me. And it is a privilege and an honor to be at this assembly. And I want to thank Mike and Ann and the committee for inviting my mother and I to be here to make our presentation. You know, I also, as Brandon talked about, but more specifically, what the literature declares. You see, I'm someone who believes in the literature of Alcoholics Anonymous. The literature declares that this is a family disease. That is why you have, in the basic text, the chapter to the wives, the chapter to the family afterwards, the chapter to the employer, because the disease I have impacts anywhere I am as an alcoholic. It's been my truth and my experience. You know, when Ann asked me to give me an idea of this topic, or what to present for this topic, I'm someone who believes in staying within the literature. And inside the literature of Alcoholics Anonymous, it says what it was like. What it was like. What happened and what it's like now. You know, before I go on to that, you know, I, in talking in terms of giving honor, my mother is the matriarch of this family. She's 94 years old, has over 55 years in Al-Anon. And I thank God for her. I thank God for my oldest son, Brandon, his staying sober. See, because this disease is a disease that's impacted a family. What we have is an example of how a family can and do recover following the basic textbook and the principles encased in Alcoholics Anonymous. I also want to thank God, extending a thanks for my daughter. It says daughter-in-law, but this is my daughter, his wife, and my son's mother, my ex-wife, being here. But also I want to thank God for my Al-Anon sponsor, for my Al-Anon home group. I want to thank Jeff for being here. Because without help, the truth is, this is too much for me. Without help. You know, when we talk about, when I go over this idea of the first black delegate in Alcoholics Anonymous, you can just say it, but it's a very, to be in a historical perspective, you know, one of the things that I think is so important about this body, my mom and I said we've never attended an archivist conference. But I do understand and appreciate how valuable y'all are to the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. And since I'm someone who, since my sponsors told me when you come across a word, look it up. If you don't know the meaning of it. So I went to Wikipedia. You know, I went to Wikipedia and this is what they say about y'all. An archivist. Ooh. Is an informational professional who assesses, collects, organizes, preserves, maintains control over, and provides access to records and archives determined to have a long-term value. And your theme of love and service. One of the things I want to say to each one of you, to Jerry and all of you, thank you for that. See, because one of the things I recognize, you know, my dad, one of the things that he did say to me is that if you are in service, you're not going to be liked. Because most people in Alcoholics Anonymous just want to come to meetings. and go home. Y'all have gone and go to another level that I'm not even there yet, but I do admire it and appreciate it. You see, because it has to be completely about love that y'all are doing this. There's a deeper motivation, a deeper understanding. My understanding and appreciation of the fact that all great spiritual movements that have ever been in the earth started out as an oral history. But if they were going to last and have any type of value, they had to be written down. They had to be chronicled and be passed on for other people. When you look at all the great religions in the world, they all have a book. In Alcoholics Anonymous, as a spiritual way of life, we have a book. And we have people who maintain the records of that book and the recording of that book. And that's why I wanted to come and make certain I said thank you to y'all. Just for that reason alone. You know, to be reflective of my dad being the first black delegate, I cannot talk about my dad without talking about the literature as well as talk about me. You know, definitely talking about me, you know. My home group is the group that spawned Lou Rhodes Sr., who put him in service. You see, he is the first black delegate, but he was inside his home group. He had to have part of the service structure. I thank God for an AA home group. You see, because I recognize the power my recovery has been and is in a group. One of the things that my dad would say, this thing called Alcoholics Anonymous, he said, this thing is heavy. It's heavier than just, more than just not drinking. But you had to capture that before you can go to more too. The idea that the power of my recovery and the recovery of any alcoholic is in the group. That is why the traditions were so important to him. When I share with people, when I've gone over and since the literature says to have a spiritual awakening, a spiritual experience, for me, when I read over Bill's story and it hit me one time in the reading, Bill had been successfully not drinking for 6 months. And when he went down to Akron and the deal did not go through, he was away from the group. And the disease seized the opportunity to come to him. And what he needed was to talk to another alcoholic. As soon as he talked to Bob, he had a group. The obsession was off of him. And he and Bob talked until they got tired of their conversation and talked to Bill Dobson. The power of an AA group. The traditions, I contend that the traditions are more important than the steps. Because the steps are personal. An individual can go through them at their own leisure and at their own opportunity. But without the traditions and the group, it'd be nothing. Once I surrendered, where would I go? I could take the basic text and the 12 and 12 and try and decipher this heavy spiritual material by myself and come up with my answers and my troubles. You know, when I think back on my dad and one of the things that had happened is I don't remember him drunk, but when he was sick and before he had transitioned, we were talking. He said one of the most hurtful scenes to him was when we were living in Philadelphia, in Richard Allen section of Philadelphia, and I was playing with all of my guys, Lucky, Ronnie, Calvin, and then we were playing marbles, and I saw my dad, and I ran towards him. And when I got close, I saw that he was drunk. And he said, the look on my face, he's never forgotten. The pain of the embarrassment and the hurt that he had. He said, I turned around, dropped my head, and walked back with my guys. And when he went into the house, I went up and I came in behind him and I rubbed his stomach and eased his discomfort. That's what he said. Don't remember any of that. But being under Lou Rhodes Sr. before Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, I had already been impacted by the disease of alcoholism. And one of the major statements in the second step talks about me. It says, defiance was my chief characteristic. Now, Dr. Silkworth said that about me before I drank. It is true about me before I drank. Because Lou Rhodes Sr. would say, Dad, can I go out and play with Robert and Jeff? And he said, yeah, you can do that. But I want you in the house before 6:30. And of course, I'm a kid, I'm a guy. Before drinking, when I got into anything that made me feel good, I get caught up. I just get caught up. And I got caught up. And when it was, and now it's around 7:30, I come in the house. Now, everybody else is left, and I come in the house. And there is this behemoth that looks like my dad standing in the doorway. And, of course, I start my conversation. First is the interrogative. What time did I tell you to be in the house? Uh-oh. I heard that tone, and my eyes started with, once upon a time, this is what happened. And you see, back in the day, I know that it's not politically correct today, but back in the day, y'all, that's not from back in the day. Y'all don't understand this, but from back in the day, they said, those parents said, I brought you in this world, I'll take you out. Back in the day, they meant that, you know what I mean? Well, when I started with the story, and then he went in this sort of, it looked like a Taekwondo type of start technique. All I saw was him coming at me, and I'm trying to get away. And I got beat, and I had resentments, you know. I thought about another time when my dad I was in high school. Well, my childhood sweetheart is here. Okay. And I didn't have access to the car per se, but you know, it was late at night. It was cold and we were standing out in the corner and I didn't want to wait for public transportation. So I took his car and I drove it almost home, almost to our house. It cut off on me at 56 and Market. She lived up in Overbrook section and now my father had, you know, told me before. Well, he had told me before, don't ever touch my car. Don't ever touch my car. And I had not only touched it, I was driving it and it cut off. And but now he's in AA, thank God. But, you know, we got on the bus, I took her home, came back down, and I tried to, jump started. It wouldn't start. I didn't know that you're supposed to let a car warm up before you drove when it's really ice cold. And so I knew from one of my other previous encounters with him that I can't go home and tell him that I took his car. So I went to the police station, and I turned myself in. I told him I just stole my father's car. And it cut off, it's F-57, and they did what y'all did. You know, they started laughing, and they said, hey, man, come see this dummy. And they took me upstairs to juvenile, and I told them, and they said, whew, you know. Then they called my mother and father, they called my dad on the phone. And the matriarch and them, they were laughing. And they said, put him on the phone. My father said, boy, you did the right thing this time. I was going to kill you. And that's how it was with me, with my dad. But also during that time, I was at West Catholic High School, and I was on the basketball team and on tennis team. And one of the things that my mother talked about, my dad was always at, there was only two fathers, but now he's in Alcoholics Anonymous. And it was only two fathers that were always at all our basketball games. Richie Barbarian's father and my dad. All my basketball games. When I got injured, he took me to the hospital after the game. You know, one day I went, we were playing Bartram High School, predominantly all black high school, and I went there and I was the only black on the basketball team. I was only black on the basketball team the whole 4 years I was there. I should have been five. I know that. It must have been a thing. But it was, I did get out in four, but the whole 4 years I was there, and we got in this game and it ended up having some problems. And I wanted to have a fight with the, let's go, because the ref cheated us out the game. And the racial remark was made, because I'm saying, they said, are you crazy? We're a bunch of white guys and it's predominantly all black school. Are you crazy about starting a fight? And I called him and told him what they had said. And he said, I said, will you come and get me? He said, no, you go on home. You get on home. You either come on the team bus or you come on anywhere you want. My dad. I thought, how could you be like that? I ended up becoming a member of the Philadelphia Police Department, because of still the inability to follow direction, take suggestions. And he watched me go through different changes. You know, the things I loved about Lou Rhodes Sr. My dad used to love to dress. You know, my dad, all the long timers in my home group, Parkside group, they all dressed. They never came before y'all in any kind of way. One of the members that I came in today said, you know, you're looking very nifty and very sporty. They were showing me how to present myself because, you see, they had such regard for the alcoholic. You know, you could dress any old kind of way before, but when you came around Alcoholics Anonymous, they wanted that 11th tradition, this thing being attraction rather than promotion. You know, so they would always dress. And they told me, whenever you got before a group, you know, stand up. Don't ever sit down and talk. Out of respect for the group. And your voice carries when you stand up. I said, oh, okay. But I really wasn't listening at then. I came around for about 6 months. I came around 11 months, you know, learning the language of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I resented the fact that everybody said, oh, you lose, son. I'm Lou Rhodes myself, by myself. I'm all that. And everybody would just say, okay. You know, I would come down, there was a famous meeting that I would attend downtown. He didn't go to. It was a mustard seed meeting, but all of his long timers were there. People like, Trudy D and Nancy and Bo and Leonard. These were my long timers. But Trudy was one of those short women, you know, that would, never mind, you know, she'd call it like a spade, you know. After I did all my heavy sharing, she said, she raised her hand, and she said, what we just heard was BS. Yeah. And I'm like, who is this woman, you know? And invariably I went out for 6 years and I caught more help. And my dad never said anything to me. On the day I finally did surrender, December the 25th, 1980. I cried out to God for help and went home. My dad was now diagnosed with cancer and he's dying of cancer and everybody seemingly knew that. And, I went home and I said, Dad, when I came to, he was sitting in the chair just looking at me. I was almost as tall as I am now, a little smaller in terms of girth, but he was saying, you know, I said, Dad, I'll do whatever you suggest. He got up out of the chair and went to the phone in the kitchen and he called Jim Davis, Jim D, my sponsor, one of my first sponsors. And Jim came over on Christmas Day, and he sat on the sofa. Now, my dad sat away from me. First example of how to do 12-step. I was my father's last 12-step call. Because when he called Jim over, and Jim was talking to me, and after a certain amount of time, he said, are you ready to go? And I looked at him and said, it's Christmas. He's like, yeah, well, what's that mean to you, you know? And my dad turned around, but he didn't say anything. I went on to Road to Recovery. I also had gone to a treatment center before the first time after trying to commit suicide. And I went to a recovery place in the Northeast and Riverside House. And there was a need for me always to break the rules, bend the rules. And you cannot make a phone call in your first couple of days there. And my dad knew that. And I tried to, and I bent the rules, created a lie, and I told the guy, he said, well, I called my dad. I just wanted to break the rule, and I called him, wrong person to call. He said, are you still at the treatment center? He said, yeah, you're not supposed to call anybody. Click. Hung up. I'm like, well, I kind of felt like, well, that's cool. I got through. I did what I wanted to do. I got to make the thing. And after coming out and after 11 months, I went out. I went out for only one reason. I never surrendered to the fact I was a drunk. Third chapter, second paragraph, more about alcoholism. That's my truth, my experience. So when I got to, when I came back this time and I said that to him, he said, well, you know, I went to Chit Chat. It's now Karen Foundation. I went to Chit Chat Farms and I was up there for 30 days. Now, again, I was the only black person in a 60 person community. And, the Eagles were going, playing for the championship that year, and, they won. But we had given permission before the meeting at 3 o'clock in the afternoon that we could watch the game up until meeting time, but we had to cut the TV off and, come up to, and inside the community, in a therapeutic community, you were not supposed to keep secrets. You know, that's the way it was structured and that's the way it went. And, you know, I got up there and, we were told that, at halftime, everybody's getting ready to go to the meeting and I was going to join. I said, well, I'll wait till halftime is over and then I'm going to go over. And just for a guy pulled down the shades 3/4 of the way down and I asked him, why are you doing that? And he said, because just in case somebody looks in, we won't get in any trouble. And, I said, I gotta go. And I went over and I had to tell my therapist, and he said, you need to stand up in community and encourage in your group and in the community and tell. And, I said, okay. And when the guys, and there was a guy who was doing what I'm doing now, doing a lead in an AA meeting. And he said, you know, he was dying of cancer of the lymph glands. He said that, as he was speaking, he is dying. He said, but he'd rather die of active cancer than active alcoholism any day of the week. And I said, wow, I needed to hear that. And I did. So now I have a problem after it was over with, because the guys come leafing in, you know, like when the crowd is mingling and my crew came in, and I ended up having to tell. I said, we got to tell. So you told, and then I became ostracized and the racial remarks started to come. You see, one of the things that my dad knew, Dick Karen, and they thought, well, here's where my celebrity status was, that he's here because of the fact that his father's on the board. My dad wasn't on the board. He just knew Dick Karen, you know. I don't know if that's right, but I think that's right. And I ended up staying sober through that experience. One of the things that my father said, that he told me about a time when I would sit by his bed after I got sober and I started coming to Alcoholics Anonymous. I can't thank y'all enough for help displaying and let me get this way of life. You see, because see, I was able to honor my dad like never before. I was able to serve him. Before he transitioned, I would drive my dad to meetings. And I would have no problem opening the doors for him and serving him. See, I've always been a big deal. Alcoholics Anonymous has always been trying to teach me how to become a servant. I didn't know how to do that. But through the power of the group, I was able to serve my dad. One of the things he said that he sat down and he told me some experiences that he had. He said one time he had gone down to North Carolina, going to go to a meeting late at night. And he drove down these winding roads and he found this particular meeting that he was looking for. And he went and sat in the back. And all the members were white. And one of the members eased from the body and stepped to him in the back, sat next to him and said, "Can we go outside for a minute?" And he says, "Okay." He went outside. And the guy says, "We don't allow blacks here." He said, "Well, because he was a traditionalist," he hollered, "Well, the third tradition says, you know, the only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking." He said, "You're absolutely right. But the fourth tradition and the second tradition say each group is autonomous in matters affecting AA, other groups in AA as a whole. And our group conscience say we don't allow blacks in here." My dad said, "Okay, you're absolutely right." I said, "They're absolutely right." He said, "Yeah, but if they were going to stay together as a group, they're going to have to embrace all of the 36 spiritual principles of Alcoholics Anonymous." My dad never just dealt with the 12 steps. He said, "The 36 spiritual principles that make up Alcoholics Anonymous, the 12 steps, the 12 traditions, and the 12 concepts." He said, "If they are going to stay together," 5 years later, they asked him to be their anniversary speaker. The group grew as they experienced the traditions and as they experienced the steps. But that's what he had taught me, how to be about the business of experiencing these steps and experiencing this way of life. He said, "Alcoholics Anonymous, as a spiritual way of life, based on the 36 spiritual principles of Alcoholics Anonymous, will deal with any kind of ism that you have going on in your life. Racism, sexism, homophobicism. When you apply the 36 spiritual principles of Alcoholics Anonymous to your life or to the situation, you'll get recovery in that area." And it's just true. You know, it's just true. But I did not, so I had to continue to grow in my own way. When I came in from the treatment center and he saw me, I was standing in the doorway, and my dad got up out of the chair and he started to cry. I said, "Dad, well, why are you crying? I'm all right." And he turned, I don't know if my mother was upstairs or down, but he said, "Baby, I think the boy's going to make it." And 3 months later, he transitioned. He died. And I've been making it ever since. I've been making it primarily on the fact that, one, I don't drink. I don't care what happens to me in my life. The power of the group, the Parkside group, the same tiny group that pushed this gentle giant, not so gentle, but, you know, to where he was in Alcoholics Anonymous, to his position. They covered me and they carried me. They walked with me. They were concerned for me, you know, that I wouldn't pick up. They couldn't stop me, but they did what they do best. They surrounded me. The group did. And they helped me get through it. So that the truth is that the group will help an individual who has my disease get through any circumstance or situation. You don't drink. You know, one of the things that, I don't know about any of you, but the long timers that I came up under, my dad and them, you know, they knew how to carry a message. They knew how to carry a 12-step message. You know, like, I don't know if any of y'all have experienced this, but being with one of your long-timers right at your front door. You ready to go. They gave you a ride, but you want to go in your front door. But an hour and 45 minutes later, you still that close to your front door because they still going. They kicking that message, you know, like, and they just going with that. And I'm like, and I'm sorry to say, I got that. I do that now, you know. People, I see them. They want to go out. I see them want to go out, and I'm saying, and I'm just going, kicking this AA program because, for the first time in my life, I have found something that I can do all day long. All day long. I can do this all day long. Carry this message. You know, AA works. It works best if I don't drink. Constantly attend AA meetings, a home group, and sponsorship. One of the things he was always concerned about was the group. There's nothing more powerful than an AA group. You know, I know that he has gotten to the high level of ascendancy within the structure in terms of going to GSO. But it started inside the group. But it also is about service. You see, I didn't know how to serve. He didn't know how to serve. But in our basic text, it says the reason why we got the gift is to be a maximum service to God and my fellow man. I had no methodology prior to coming to Alcoholics Anonymous on how to do it. I had a religion, but not how to carry. And the religion is good. You know, my dad and the long-timers from the Parkside group had gone down. As I said, I'm a retired member of the Philadelphia Police Department. It should have been really, you know, my track record should have been arrested and or fired. That's just the straight up truth. But because of my dad and some of the long-timers from the Parkside group taking our basic text down to Frank Rizzo, who was our police commissioner at the time, and sharing with him the power of this book and the possibility of having employees return to health who has this disease, they started an EPA program, which I have been it from twice, because I came around once, blew it, and then when I came around the second time, the program was there. But it was my dad and them long times that took that down to him and said, this is, you may, after 5 years on the program, they gave me a evaluation. Thank you, Holy Spirit. An evaluation that said that, I was an asset and a credit to the Philadelphia Police Department. I knew it wasn't me. It was you people, this way of life. I was still messing up. I was still throwing things out of order. But you people were carrying me. After about 5 years on the program, I ended up not getting my driver's license. You know, I was a police officer pulling you over for not having your license, and I didn't have mine. And the computer died me out. He don't have one either, you know. And a commissioner and one a guy who was a captain when I went in one time for a transgression, he said, if you ever come back here again, I'm coming for the job. I don't care what you have to say. 5 years later, he's no longer a captain. He's now a chief inspector. This guy kept his word. And I went to my dad and said, listen, this was before my dad transitioned. I told my dad, listen, can you call somebody? Cause I knew he had judges and everybody like that in his life. And, he said, son, you've always gotten out of things. Try to go around things. Why don't you go through it and see what you look like on the other side? I didn't want to hear that. I mean, like, that's really for saints, but that ain't for me, you know. That ain't for me. So I said, yeah, all right, thanks, Dad. Thank you for sharing, you know. And I went downtown to see his sponsee, who was a judge, and I stepped to him with a pretext of great social idea, and then his sponsee said, Lou. And at that time, his sponsee was a fraternity brother to the police commissioner at the time. So I figured y'all do the sign and then the wait to be off the brother. He said, Lou, I tell you what, why don't you go through this experience? And if you need my help, I'm saying, oh man. I said, did my dad call you? He said, no. I said, oh, okay. Mm-hmm. But he said, you've never gone through things. So when I got ready to go through this experience, now 5 years on the program, dad had transitioned and my sponsors went with me to the hearing. But this time I said, whatever, they're absolutely right. I should have had my driver's license. The power of you people, this way of life, had me be able to take the weight and responsibility for the things I did in my life, with my life. You know, I have been blessed to have this gift of recovery. I am richly blessed having the man like my dad and all the first one, the guys in the Parkside group. I'm richly blessed having the first 100 who put this book together and this way of life together for me to follow. I am a success hunter winner today, and there's a statement that I heard that in terms of an inheritance is something that you give to somebody, and a legacy is something that you place in somebody. That's what my dad and the first 100 have done for me. Thanks a lot.
Thank you all for attending. Please remember our 11th tradition of anonymity. Please close the meeting with the Serenity Prayer, those that care to join.